does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government program. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week we'll discuss the fiscal cliff with Campaign for America's Future co-director Roger Hickey and the D.C. government's labor management partnership with AFGE's 14th District National Vice President Dwight Bowman. But first, we've been joined by Alex Lawson, Executive Director of Social Security Works. Alex, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Alex, first time with us. Start off by telling me about Social Security Works and also the Strengthen Social Security Coalition that you're a part of.
Definitely. Social Security Works is an organization that is dedicated to preserving and expanding the promise of Social Security as a vehicle for social justice, but also that represents really the best of American values, belief in hard work, rewarding delayed gratification, and rewarding playing by the rules. And that's why it is so incredibly popular across all party lines, all demographic lines, and why we think it's incredibly important that Social Security Works exists specifically to fight for Social Security. And really, who we are is embodied in our name. Social Security Works. That's the main message. One of the best things that we've done is we've convened the Strengthen Social Security Coalition, which is a very large, broad-based coalition, over 350 national organizations. AFGE is, of course, a critical component of the coalition. But we have a lot of labor. We have women's groups, groups that focus on seniors issues, children's groups, civil rights groups. It really is a broad-based coalition because, like I said, Social Security really is a cross-cutting system.
One of the things that you have established with the coalition are seven core principles with which you operate. Can you go through a couple of those and just tell us about some of the things that are important to you in the coalition?
Yeah, I can go through them. I think the one that is most important to this interview right now is a fundamental understanding that absolutely no benefit cuts should be considered in any sort of quote-unquote reform efforts of Social Security. And that's because where we are with Social Security is it's operating at a surplus every year. I think 2012 is estimated to be around $52 billion. It is a separately funded system. It does not pull from the general fund. It is, as everyone knows, you know, it's our system. We look at our paychecks. We see the FICA contributions. We understand that this system is ours. And any benefit cuts would actually be basically DC reaching their hand into our pockets and taking our money. So that core principle is really important to understand. It is not an extreme position. It is not some sort of fringe position to say absolutely no benefit cuts. This is a deeply popular position across party lines, demographic lines, basically understanding that Social Security works and anything that says, you know, Social Security is adding to the deficit or the debt, those are red herrings. Those are if your listeners hear an outlet say things like that, they need to immediately understand that that outlet is not as trustworthy and everything that they're saying should be, you know, take a second look at it.
That's an important distinction that you make about the program being separately funded. It's not adding to the deficit. It's not adding to the debt. Why then, Alex, do you think that those accusations, if you will, come up in conversation?
It's a pretty simple – I mean, there's a couple answers to that, but I think the one that is most important to recognize is that there is and has been basically a 30-year movement led primarily by billionaires on Wall Street who really want to dismantle the system and sell it off piece by piece. They understand that Social Security is the embodiment of everything they hate. They can't get their hands on it. There's no way they can make money off of it. It works extraordinarily well. And so it is a representation of really, we the people. This is what when government really, really works incredibly well. And these Wall Street barons and oligarchs, they just can't handle that. And so they have always had Social Security in their crosshairs, and they use disinformation, misinformation, and just blatant lies to try to, you know, they always, I put scare quotes around reform because their proposals are always about just dismantling it and selling it off piece by piece. They, if people wanted to have an honest conversation about Social Security, there are enough experts. I mean, the co-directors of Social Security Works have decades of experience on Social Security. If it was an honest conversation, we would come to the table. I think a lot of people would come to the table and have that. But it's not an honest conversation. And just the starting point, as you said, when you say, you know, oh, there's a deficit crisis, and we need to cut Social Security, you're not having an honest conversation. Because hypothetically, you could cut Social Security by 50%, right? You could zero it out. And you know what that would do to the debt? Nothing. Because Social Security does not add, by law, cannot add one penny to the debt. It has no borrowing authority. Its outflows have to match its inflows.
It's a pay-as-you-go system, right? Today's workers pay for today's retirees.
Exactly, because it really is a generational compact. It is an intergenerational promise. And that's why, you know, I led with representing the best of American values. When we built our Social Security system, what we set out to do as Americans and generations of Americans working together have built our Social Security system. And it really is an embodiment of a promise between Americans of us to ourselves saying, you know what, this works. When we all work together, we can create a social insurance program that takes care of one very foreseeable thing, which is being able to retire with dignity and self-sufficiency. And also, along the way, we figured out that the same system can really be is the only system that can be in place to take care of two things that are completely unforeseeable: a career-ending disability and Social Security disability insurance, or the loss of a breadwinner. If somebody is killed, and their family can receive survivor's benefits. And both of those two parts of Social Security are oftentimes left out of the debate, and they're incredibly important. 33% of beneficiaries are from those two parts of Social Security system.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Alex Lawson, the Executive Director of Social Security Works. Alex, one of the core principles that you do operate under is this idea that Social Security should not be privatized in whole or in any part. Talk to me a little bit about the dangers of going down that privatization road for a program like Social Security.
It's a really simple one that I think your listeners understand completely, and all Americans do too, because all you have to look at is why we built our Social Security system. You just hold up our Social Security system next to the risky alternatives. People understand that in 2008, they saw things that were supposed to be rock solid, like home equity. They saw that evaporate. They saw it be decimated. They saw their 401ks get, you know, basically turned into 201ks. They saw that all of these risky alternatives, there was a potential for them to basically disappear. But you know what? Throughout the whole thing, the rock that people could count on was Social Security, which hasn't missed a payment in 77 years and never will miss a payment. So the danger is pretty apparent in that. You just have to look at the alternatives and say, well, what would have happened if W. Bush got his way? What would have happened if people had invested their Social Security and diverted their Social Security into private accounts? Well, 2008 would have evaporated a bunch of people's retirement savings or their promise for a secure retirement. And again, I think it's pretty self-evident that if you gave Social Security to Wall Street, what they would do, as they do with everything, is they would gamble it. They would wager it for short-term gains for their CEOs, for their managers, to get huge bonuses. And they wouldn't think about the long-term consequences of that. And that's what Social Security is about. Our Social Security system is about understanding that generation after generation of Americans come into our nation, work hard, And we have built a system that allows us to retire with dignity.
Fiscal cliff headlines continue to dominate everywhere, especially around Washington. Take me through the state of that situation. Where are we? Who are the key players? What's happening?
It's a really complicated situation, and that's D.C. oftentimes likes to operate in that situation. They like to operate under a fog of confusion, a fog of chaos, and a fog of acronyms that are incredibly difficult to understand. Right? You look at bill names, and not always, but oftentimes the bill name is basically the inverse of what the bill does. So the fiscal cliff is no different. First of all, just the name, the so-called fiscal cliff, that is it's a misnomer. It's only created to cause fear because the picture that you could go off something. And there is no actual fiscal cliff. It is just a bunch of different things, pieces of legislation and a bunch of different things, some of them very regular, like the doc fix, which comes up every single year. And they've just mushed it all together to give this sense of chaos so that they can ram through deeply unpopular things like cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid benefits. The state of play right now is you're basically seeing it's the president and Boehner. Those are the two main players. But of course, McConnell and Reid in the Senate and Pelosi in the House. And you have a lot of people, you know, coming forward with different positions. And, you know, you've had over 100 members in the House say that they will absolutely not vote for anything that includes benefit cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. But really where we are is Boehner and Obama are going back and forth saying that each side is unreasonable. The thing that I want to just cut through to just, I'm sure your listeners know, but just to remind everyone, is that the worst case scenario here is a bad deal. Because, I mean, no one wants to go, quote unquote, over the fiscal cliff. But if the most of the proposals, the so-called grand bargains, they're worse, right? And that's what people need to do. They need to put next to each other the proposals. And it would be really ridiculous if the bargain or the deal were worse than the threat. And there really is some real problems. I mean, unemployment insurance, UI alone, if they don't extend that, that has massive economic consequences for America. We're in a very feeble recovery right now, and we need to come together as a nation and say, you know what? We don't have a deficit crisis right now. We have a jobs crisis right now, right? We have things that we should be focusing on right now to go back to Social Security. They always point to, you know, projections. Social Security is incredibly conservatively managed. So the projections go out for decades. And they're pointing at potential issues based on current projections if nothing is done in 2033. But you know what? Today, there is an unemployment crisis. Today, there is an economic crisis in that we cannot allow the current situation, the current levels of unemployment, the current levels of stagnant economic growth to become the new normal. The best thing that we could do for all of this, the deficit, the debt, Social Security, is we can get people back to work. We can build the middle class back up. We can recognize that that's what makes America great. The job creators are the middle class. The job creators are us. And that's what we need to focus on. And all the rest of this is really a smokescreen for trying to get through deeply unpopular cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue with Social Security Works Executive Director Alex Lawson.
Please. Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We're continuing with Alex Lawson, the Executive Director of Social Security Works. Alex, earlier this week, the Social Security Coalition held a day of action with a number of other progressive stakeholders. Take me through what happened there.
It was a really fantastic day. And I'm going to actually rewind a little bit before that, because it was actually the continuation of something that I think is really tremendous. And the news has not covered it to the level that they should. I have never seen such an enormous number of progressive groups, but it goes outside of progressive groups. It really is a huge coalition that are clear on one thing: absolutely no benefit cuts to Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid, and no tax cuts for the richest 2%. Some of the groups are focused on more than that, but the fact that so many organizations and groups and individuals have come out. You're seeing religious leaders come out. You're seeing labor come out, women's groups coming out. All of these organizations, and most importantly, you're seeing millions of Americans around the country who are standing up and saying, look, I did not just vote or I did not vote for you to cut my Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid benefits. That is not what I voted for. So the day of action was fantastic. There were hundreds of events around the country, candlelight vigils that were really calling on, really drawing attention to the fact that this is a moral choice. This is about our nation and our people deciding who we are and what we want to focus on. And answering that question, saying what we want to focus on, we want to focus on building the middle class. We want to focus on creating good-paying jobs for hardworking Americans who want to work. What we don't want is benefit cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid so that we can give further tax cuts to the richest 2% in this country.
How is it that we go about doing, as you suggested, building the middle class and giving more opportunities to working people?
I think that's a hard answer, but I can at least tell you what step one is. Step one is that we have to not shoot ourselves in the knee during this so-called fiscal cliff, the fiscal showdown, because if we were to cut Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid benefits, as we all know, those dollars go directly into the economy. It's not like if you give a billionaire a tax cut, he doesn't go out and spend that. He doesn't go out and buy things with that. You know, he socks it away. If it's Mitt Romney, he probably puts it in an island offshore somewhere. But, right, I mean, that's not going into the economy. But if you take money out of Social Security, you're taking it out of people's Social Security checks, and that is their budgets are basically to the penny, right? I mean, the average Social Security benefits $13,000 a year. If you take money from that, that's money being pulled directly out of the economy, and that translates into fewer jobs. So that's the first step, is making sure that we get through this fiscal showdown without injuring our ability to create good-paying jobs, and setting the stage for next year, focusing on the things that we need to focus on. And I think that's basically what we need to do.
And a couple of the things that you've mentioned already earlier today, of course, most recently, the average Social Security recipient receives about $13,000 a year. These payments are to ensure dignity and some self-sufficiency as one ages. We're not talking about loads of money. This is a very basic and limited safety net for some of the reasons that you've described.
And most importantly, it is an earned benefit. This is not something that is given to people. We earn our benefits. The more you pay in, the more you get out in terms of Social Security. And that's why it is a I'm going to focus on one particular thing that they're talking about in the fiscal showdown that is also very relevant to AFGE folks, but it's relevant to everyone. The chain CPI is a policy that is being promoted as a more accurate measure of inflation, which is just it's not true. And if you push on that policy, what you'll see is it's just a straightforward benefit cut. It also is a benefit cut that goes into effect immediately. It hits current retirees. It hits current government. So AFGE folks would actually most likely get double hit because the COLA is also used to calculate all sorts of different benefits, right? So the chain CPI is a yearly benefit cut that accumulates over time. So it gets worse the older people get. So the only people it hits worse than a 75-year-old is an 85-year-old. The only people it hits worse than an 85-year-old is a 95-year-old. So it's literally a cruel policy, and at its root, it's saying, oh, well, we need a more accurate measure of inflation. Well, guess what? Most folks on Social Security are paying a lot of their income for medical costs, and medical inflation is extremely higher than the current CPI. And so the current CPI does not accurately reflect the costs faced by most seniors, but the chain CPI goes in the exact wrong direction. We need to do something more like the CPIE, and sorry, I'm three-letter acronyming you, TLAng.
A little Washington speak.
A little Washington speak, but a more accurate reflection of the inflation that people are actually facing would include the real effects of medical inflation. So it would be higher. Again, the thing about the chain CPI is that it not only hits Social Security benefits, it also hits, let's take a disabled veteran. It is hitting a disabled veteran twice. It is hitting a person who has served our nation, a person who has paid and really laid their life on the line. And now DC is saying, oh, well, guess what? We're going to hit your benefits, both your Social Security benefits and your veterans benefits in whatever form they come. And we're going to actually do that every single year. We're going to give you less and less and less. And that is something that I think most people need. They need to understand that this is how DC operates often, unfortunately, is they have an innocuous sounding thing and then they have a tagline. The chain CPI more accurately reflects inflation. But when you push on it, you see that that's the exact opposite of what it does. And so we just want to make sure that everyone understands what they're talking about when they say chain CPI. They're talking about a benefit cut. They're talking about a benefit cut that hits all Americans immediately, gets worse over time, and it double hits AFGE folks. It double hits veterans. And it's really a policy that should be rejected out of hand, and it's the height of insanity that it is being given serious consideration.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Alex Lawson, the Executive Director of Social Security Works. Alex, in addition to potential harm to beneficiaries, there's also another consideration when talking about cutting Social Security, particularly its salaries and expenses budget, and that would be the workforce, the people who actually go into the offices every day. They serve the beneficiaries. They process the claims. They're working with the beneficiaries day in and day out in these field offices. Talk about the impact that scaling back the workforce would have on eventually the public service that's provided.
It really is a death by a thousand cuts, because not only are SSA employees it's not just that they go to work every day and they work with beneficiaries. They also are the holders of the institutional knowledge. You are talking about folks who have the highest level of information about how this system works, how a person can best access their benefits. And this is a human skill. You can't replace this skill with some sort of automated online computer, even if you get past the fact that many people who need to access Social Security are not going to be the most tech-savvy people. What I'm saying is that even if you are the most tech-savvy person, you can't replace the human knowledge of saying it is a complicated situation that people find themselves in. There's a lot of different factors that play into a person's benefits, and there are choices that people make that will impact the level of their benefits for the rest of their lives. And Social Security workers are the people who know exact, and they care about the system. They care about people getting what they've earned. So when you are scaling back either by, you're taking money out of this system year after year after year. And again, the part just, I know your listeners know this, but the part that's really just aggravating is that there's a $2.7 trillion surplus, right? It's sitting there. It's in a trust fund. It's $2.7 trillion. So why are these cuts to Social Security being made for a deficit that is in the general fund, right? It has nothing to do with Social Security. So it doesn't even make sense that way. But just to hopefully not go too off on your question, it is incredibly detrimental, not only the cuts, but you're limiting access. You're closing offices and you're saying, oh, well, you know, there's another office. It's only 50 miles away. Well, guess what? Social Security serves a lot of people who can't get that 50 miles away. This is not a system. It really illuminates the difference between a lot of the folks making decisions in D.C. who are saying, well, you know, I could drive 50 more miles in my Mercedes. That would be no problem for me. Versus the Americans who work their life and they earn their benefits. And or if a person was disabled and can no longer work and you're saying, OK, well, now you're going to have to drive into some city. It doesn't work. And that's the main point. Also, if you just keep, you know, there's been a pay freeze for 2 years. If you just keep that up, it's not only death by a thousand cuts, it's also destroying the system through demoralizing the workforce. I mean, how can people be expected to be the holders of that knowledge and care for the system if they don't feel like they're being cared for themselves?
And that 2 year pay freeze, of course, is amounting to $103 billion over 10 years that it will cost federal employees. Alex, as we close out here, what's next for Social Security Works? What's next for the coalition?
Immediately, what we have to do, and everyone, not just the coalition, but everyone needs to do this. We need to raise our voices. We need to keep this drumbeat up. And we need to there's another word that I like to point out. They talk about political cover. There is no political cover. And we need everyone in D.C. to hear that. If people vote for cuts to Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid benefits, there will be no cover. Those votes will be seen and there will be repercussions. And what we need to do is tell them that now. And we need to call in our members, our senators, and let them know that we're watching and there is no cover on this one.
Alex Lawson, the executive director of Social Security Works. Alex, it was great having you in the show today.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue our fiscal cliff discussion with Campaign for America's Future co-director Roger Hickey.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members.
The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Roger Hickey, the co-director of the Campaign for America's Future. Roger, welcome back. Always fun to have you on the program.
Hello, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Roger, we are approaching the edge of the fiscal cliff, the so-called fiscal cliff, with a deadline just a few weeks away. Where does the situation stand today?
Well, it's important for your listeners to remember that this is an artificially created fiscal cliff. It's as though the Republicans loaded a revolver, put it to the head of the economy, and said, we've got to make a deal or I pull the trigger. Yes, it would have some bad effects if they did go over the cliff or pull the trigger. But in fact, this is a totally artificial setup. And we could simply take the bullets out of the gun. We could even go into next year without anything disastrous happening. But they are using this kind of shock doctrine style to get a deal that includes all kinds of bad things on Social Security, on Medicare, on Medicaid, and government spending in general. So this cliff, navigating this situation requires that Democrats stay united. And as we've seen, the president has done a pretty good job of getting the Republicans to say that, in fact, they will raise taxes on the wealthy. That's going to be part of the deal that we're going to applaud.
Roger, we know where the president stands on the issue, and Republicans have offered a couple of counteroffers to the proposals. What do you make of the counteroffer proposals? What do you think is in there?
Well, first of all, the president was elected on the proposition that he was going to protect Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and that he was going to roll back the tax cuts that Bush gave to the wealthy, while maintaining those cuts for middle class and poor people. It's clear that the president is standing firm on taxes. We don't know what he's going to do on Medicare and Social Security, and those are the things that the Republicans are their pound of flesh that they are demanding for a deal. They are saying we won't raise taxes on the wealthy at all unless you means test Medicare or raise the retirement age of Medicare. Two things that make no sense at all, that would hurt the program and actually cost the American people more money, not less, not save us money. And they're also demanding a new cost of living index for Social Security, which would basically reduce what every Social Security retiree gets in their check each month, hurting people, especially low-income people. So this is the kind of thing that the Republicans are demanding in order to prevent economic disaster. It's really an example of shock doctrine demands that amount to just holding the economy for ransom. So that's what we're expecting the deal to look like.
Roger, when we talk about things like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, and of course we just had on Alex Lawson from Social Security Works addressing some of these issues, what is the danger of lowering the benefits for those programs?
Well, as your audience probably knows pretty well, Social Security is not contributing to the federal deficit one penny. Social Security is entirely financed by payroll taxes. In fact, we've been paying extra taxes over many, many decades in order to pay for the baby boom retirement. So there's a trust fund there. It has nothing to do with the deficit. Republicans keep essentially wanting to steal money from the trust fund to help pay off other parts of the federal government. It should not be touched. There's all kinds of ways to strengthen Social Security if that's what you care about. But these Republicans don't want to strengthen Social Security. They want to steal money from the trust fund and use it for paying down the other parts of the deficit. On Medicare, Medicare is an incredibly crucial program at this moment in time. And yet the most important Republican program is to postpone the age at which people are eligible for Medicare. Well, that's one way to save money. If you simply don't allow people to get onto Medicare, you save money in terms of Medicare's payout, but you incur other costs because they go on to Medicaid. They will go on to the new healthcare exchanges that are just being set up. They will be fairly costly for the new universal healthcare program. And there's going to be a large number of people who have to pay out of pocket for those 2 years when they're not covered. They're going to get sicker and sicker. And then when they get into Medicare, it's going to cost Medicare more to take care of them. So there's been plenty of calculations. Ezra Klein at the Washington Post and others have pointed out that it really will cost the American public and the government more to do these cockamamie schemes, which, as I say, the Republicans want just as a hide to hang up on their wall. Rather than any kind of real progressive program for covering people. And Medicaid, of course, is essential to the Affordable Care Act. Expansion of Medicaid, that is essential to Obama's health care plan. So these programs really should not be touched. They can be reformed, as the Obama health care plan did some valuable reforms without touching benefits and without touching the modest operation at Social Security and Medicare that manages the program.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Roger Hickey, the co-director of the Campaign for America's Future. Roger, one of the things that you've been communicating through the campaign is this idea that a grand bargain could be a grand betrayal. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, we just had an election in which the American people said overwhelmingly when they reelected President Obama and other candidates is that we don't want to kill the economy while imposing austerity, and we don't want to cut vital programs like Social Security and Medicare in order to bring down the deficit. So, as you remember, the campaign focused on jobs. It focused even Mitt Romney was talking about reviving economic growth. So any deal that kills economic growth will increase the deficit, and any deal that hurts our health care system and vulnerable people in the middle class and poor people is a betrayal of what people were promised in the election campaign, a betrayal of the democratic process. It may be true that the Republicans will impose as their requirement cuts to Medicare and Social Security benefits. But if they do that, we're going to have to label those people who insisted on those changes as people who are harming the American voters, harming the American society. And we're going to have to remember what they did in the next election. This is not the kind of deal that they are talking about now, although it raises taxes on the wealthy and does some good reforms. If it cuts benefits to people that need them, we should not call that a deal that we're willing to support, even if it has to pass the U.S. Congress. And we've got to fight against that betrayal now and into the future.
Lastly, Roger, before we close out here, of course, Michigan legislators passed a right-to-work measure this week for both public and private sectors, with Governor Rick Snyder signing the bill into law. What are your quick thoughts on that?
This is a right-wing crusade to hurt labor movement and to hurt the ability of organized labor to come back and to raise people's wages. So it's been widely described as the right to work for less money. The president even said that yesterday when he visited Michigan. And everybody who cares about the decline of wages and incomes and family health in America has got to be against this. And we've got to build a movement that goes well beyond labor in Michigan in order to turn this thing around and rebuild and strengthen the ability of workers to organize. So it's a threat to all of us. It's a threat to the middle class, and we should all be crusading against it.
Our good friend Roger Hickey, the co-director of the Campaign for America's Future. Roger, always great to have you on the program. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Jason. Take care.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll discuss the D.C. government's labor management partnership with AFGE 14th District National Vice President Dwight Bowman.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab, or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Dwight Bowman, AFGE's 14th District National Vice President. NVP Bowman, welcome back.
Well, good morning. How are you doing?
Very well, sir. Very well. Let's start off by talking about the D.C. government's labor management partnership. Well, I understand there's a new liaison for the mayor, Mr. Lionel Collins. Tell me about him and some of the things that you've been working on.
Well, Mr. Collins came on board early this year, and as the mayor promised, we now have a liaison between his office and labor, and it adds a plus for the entire city because now we can address some of those issues that had been laying on the floor waiting for someone.
What are some of the issues that you want to tackle first as part of the partnership?
Well, actually, George Johnson and the mayor, George is with Ask Me Council 20. He and the mayor are the co-chairs of the labor management partnership, and they have determined that they want to deal with two issues up front. One has to do with the employee morale, and the other has to do with customer service. And these are two issues that both sides have an interest in, and these are points that are good for the public. Those are going to be the first two things laid on the table for discussion, and we're going to tackle those and see where we go. it makes for a good basis for a new beginning of the partnership, which was put on hold during the Pinty administration.
Let's talk about some of these items. First, employee morale. Talk to me about some of the issues or concerns that you have around employee morale and what we can do to improve it.
Well, obviously, there's some things out there now that are very important to the employees in terms of their pay, their benefits, the man or person power that's available. We don't have enough resources for the employees to do the job that needs to be done in some cases. There is some concern about how sequestration on the federal side is going to impact the D.C. government because there are a number of things which the federal government funds, number of positions, and there's also a payment that comes to the District of Columbia, which would have an impact. So employee morale at this point is extremely low when you consider that everything is up in the air and no one knows exactly what the figures are going to be, whether there's going to be any downsizing of the D.C. government, what programs will be impacted. And this is important to the employees as well as to the citizens of the District of Columbia.
So then how would that impact item number two, which is customer service?
Well, obviously, if you do not have the staffing for a number of the things, a number of the programs where the public interacts with the D.C. government, then the customer service goes downhill. The citizens who need those customer services are not well served and in some cases may not be served at all.
MVP Bowman, I understand that you recently, along with our national president, J. David Cox Sr., met with the mayor. Tell me about that meeting.
Well, it was a very good meeting. President Cox and the mayor had an opportunity to exchange some ideas at the Democratic National Convention, and there was a determination after that by President Cox that he wanted to engage the mayor and make sure that the mayor understood that AFGE was on board, that we consider ourselves partners, and that we want to work with the city. The meeting took place approximately 2 months ago now, and it was a good exchange. And during the exchange, I raised the question about the CFO's projections for the city. We really don't know, what's going to happen in the near future with this going off the cliff and the sequestration. But the mayor assured me that there would be some activity as soon as we did get the numbers, that the unions would be notified as to how this would impact the city. I thought that the meeting went well, and I thought that there were some frank discussions about where we are right now.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Dwight Bowman, AFGE's 14th District National Vice President. MVP Bowman, in some previous conversations that you and I had, you had expressed to me your concern about somewhat of a lack of access to the mayor. Do you see this now with this meeting a couple of months ago as maybe a turning of the tide and being able to really have an opportunity to sit down with him and have your concerns addressed?
Yes. Not only with the mayor, but with the liaison, and watching all of this come together at the same time in terms of the partnership, the liaison having been appointed, President Cox and I having access to the mayor a couple of months ago, and the mayor's promise that he wanted to keep that up, and personally inviting J. David Cox, our national president, to join me when we have the next meeting is fruitful, I would say. I would say it's a sign of a good, solid relationship continuing and developing to be even more.
And MVP Bowman, as you know, on the program here, we've talked a lot about Election Day and the results and the impact on AFGE's members in the federal workforce. But what I want to talk to you about is the results of Election Day on our members in the District of Columbia. What stood out to you most?
Well, the involvement of the members in the election was outstanding. They heard AFGE, and they recognized that there was a need for them to be highly visible. One of the things that we've been doing with our D.C. workers is showing them the relationship between AFGE and the federal government, AFGE's D.C. workers and our federal government, and the connection between their brothers and sisters across the country in AFGE and them. Because even though there's a lack of understanding to some degree about how some of the committees work, we have been getting the message out throughout AFGE that congressmen and senators in other parts of the country have an impact on the District of Columbia, and that it's made it important and for the residents of the District of Columbia who are AFGE members to be involved with their counterparts across the country, and to recognize that there is a connection and that all of our activities are extremely important across the board.
MVP Bowman, in the district, who are some elected officials and maybe some reelected officials who will be able to help you as you push the union's agenda?
Well, we're looking forward to working with Phil Mendelson in particular. We have been very supportive of him, and for the most part, he has been very supportive of us, and certainly the principles that we have in common. Now that he is going to be the chair of the city council, his role will be even more important for us. And we look forward to working with all members of the city council, including the new independents that are on board. And what we expect is to have a good, solid relationship with everyone. And I think that our history in AFGE has been a good one. We have recognized that we may not always agree with members of the city council, but and they may have a different point of view. But as long as they give us access, we're prepared to show them how we can work together even when we disagree, something that doesn't seem to work very well on Capitol Hill.
Speaking of Capitol Hill, MVP Bowman, a key issue facing the district and something that you touched briefly on earlier is sequestration. How would sequestration impact D.C. government employees and, importantly, the services that they provide?
Well, this is something that came out during the course of the meeting with the mayor. Even though the CFO has made certain projections, we have no idea whether those projections are anywhere near correct, because we don't know what the funding levels will be for the city. It's going to be virtually impossible to figure out what city services are going to be directly impacted, how quickly they're going to be impacted, and to what degree they're going to be impacted. That's something that we need some real positive numbers for. And the mayor and I have, you know, talked about that on more than one occasion, and we're looking forward to seeing what happens between the president and the Congress, so that we can get those good numbers. The interesting thing here is that whether there is sequestration or not, there's obviously going to be a significant impact in the future with regard to the funding. And our expectation on AFGE's side is that this is going to be extreme, and whether there's sequestration or not, and positions will be affected, and budgets of various agencies across the board will be affected.
Dwight Bowman, AFGE's 14th District National Vice President. MVP Bowman, always fun to have you on the program. Thanks so much for coming on today.
Well, thank you for having me, and happy holidays to you and your family.
And you as well. Thank you. Thank you to our guests this week, Social Security Works Executive Director Alex Lawson, Campaign for America's Future Co-Director Roger Hickey, and AFGE 14th District National Vice President Dwight Bowman. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you by the American Federation of Government Employees.